how do you do? I see you've met my faithful handyman. He's just a little brought down because when you knocked, he thought you were the candy man. Don't get strung up by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover. I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover. I'm just a sweet...
And welcome back to an excellent episode of the Multimedia Men Podcast. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher Radio. Find us under the Multimedia Men. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. We do
five stars.
We want you to do five stars. Tell us how sweet smelling we are. And this is our second episode coming back with the Multimedia Men. I'm Brian Kluger with BoomstickComics.com, HighDefDigest.com, and the Entertainment Answer Radio Show. And I am with the amazing, the iconic Wichita man, Wade Davis. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's like you have a very impressive resume when you start listing it all out.
Well, thank you. I like to think that I have a lot of fun. That's all there is to it. I have a lot of fun. I like to be involved in several different avenues, you know.
Well, let's not get carried away. I mean, the resume is more impressive than the man.
That's true. I'm just mediocre.
Well, you're mediocrity.
Yes, the mediocrity.
Giving you a hard time. You're better than all of that. Oh. You're the biggest deal I know.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you. How have you been this week?
I've been pretty great, man. Been pretty great. How about yourself?
Been doing well, man. It's been a fun time. It's the Halloween weekend right now. You're in Wichita. I'm in Dallas. It's beautiful weather. I'm going to be a pro wrestler with the tights and elbow pads and everything. Did you dress up this year? Or if you didn't in the past, have you done anything you really like to dress up as?
It's one of those where every year I actually go for comfort more than anything else. So it's really something where I can be as laid back and casual as I can. You know, I don't go for the slutty outfits like some guys, man.
I would love to see you in like a slutty Halloween outfit.
Yeah, I'm a slutty police officer and a slutty fireman.
Oh my God, I am just getting all excited listening to that. Well, very cool. We have a really cool we have a cool show for you today, our beautiful, beautiful listeners. We're going to talk about that recent remake on Fox of Rocky Horror Picture Show, Let's Do the Time Warp Again. We have a few things to say about it, because I believe myself as well as Wade are, you know, big enough fans of the original film, and we have a few things to say. And also, we are going to talk about, we're going to let you know, since we love bad movies that are so good, we're going to talk about two that you might have not seen or may have heard of in passing, but they're pretty iconic. They have a huge cult following. Those movies are Birdemic 1, Shock and Terror, and Birdemic 2, The Resurrection, which our own Wichita man, Wade Davis, is a contributor to the funds of Part 2. We're going to get his insight in on that. And then since it's Halloween, we're going to talk about some of the cool, lost, fabled Halloween episodes of our favorite TV shows that maybe this weekend or next week you can kind of revisit on Netflix or rent or wherever you have. So let's start with this Rocky Horror Picture Show remake, which has been trying to go on now for like 10 years getting remade, but Fox they're doing like, you know, it seems like every quarter or every 6 months they're doing a live television production of some sort of movie or play, whether it be Grease or Wizard of Oz. They did Rocky Horror, which it wasn't really in front of a live audience, but it had that feel to it. And it was directed by Kenny Ortega. Kenny Ortega was the choreographer for the movie Dirty Dancing. He directed Newsies, Hocus Pocus, and the recent Michael Jackson concert film, This Is It. This Rocky Horror remake was $20 million budget, and the original producer of the original Rocky Horror Picture Show was Lou Adler, who kind of co-executive produced this one. And I gotta ask Wade, I know what I feel. I want to know how you feel, because I know you're a fan of the original like I am. What did you think about this remake?
Well, first of all, I gotta tell you, you just told me it was a $20 million invested in this?
Yes, which I can only imagine that most of that went to... I don't even know if most of it went to Tim Curry or most of it went to, like, the ridiculous actors here. Because there's only a couple of them that are famous, but... Or have done a lot, so I don't know where it all went.
Well, so it was okay. Here it is in a nutshell. I think that if you love the original Rocky Horror, if you haven't seen the original Rocky Horror, it's worth checking out. You know, I wouldn't even say that I'm the target demographic for that sort of movie or musical or anything like that. The new one, I guess the idea was trying to make it to where it's more accessible to new audience or something like that. But overall, I just thought it didn't hit the mark at all.
I couldn't agree more. I got introduced to Rocky Horror, the original, back when I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I fell in love with it. Like, I dressed up like Frankenfurter. I've had parties. I've been to all the live stage shows. I've been to the midnight movies with the shadow cast. I've done it all. I have screenplays. I have memorabilia. I'm a huge fan. So it struck a chord with me when I found out they were trying to remake this. At first, it was MTV. Then it was Fox. I was like, oh, God, they're going to fuck it up. And then come to find out, you know, it aired this past week or last weekend. It seems like Fox really wanted just to make a Glee episode, which they did do a Rocky Horror Glee episode, but this was like more... It seems like just all your favorite pop stars and, or like, just put them in all in this one show and just let loose. But it didn't have any of the camp that the original did, which people love so much. It tried to interject all the audience participation from the theater, which was really weird and didn't flow well. And I think
let's stop right there for a second, because okay. I think that you're hitting one of the major key aspects of what I think makes Rocky Horror have some longevity here. The cult midnight screenings and those sorts of things. People go in and have all these different audience participation cues. If no one's ever done it before, you should absolutely go try it sometime. Just you buy like a little participation kit, you go to the theater, and then basically just follow what everybody in the crowd does. It's a lot of fun. Here, and you know, you brought up, you mentioned it early where you talked about they did not do this as a live broadcast, which I originally thought they were going to. And I think that that was the real miss of the whole thing, was that I think that if they would have done it live and had that kind of energy behind it, it could have been something better than what it was. But in the end, the music was flat. It was because it was, like you said, it was a Glee episode. When the original Rocky Horror was glam rock and sex and kind of punk, and was they got together and said, hey, you know, let's form our own kind of community and make something cool here, and it had none of that here. It was all like the high school football jock and the head cheerleader were like kind of in on it. It was really not an outcast or an oddball.
No, because in the original film, when you see all the warpies, all the transsexual transvestites at the party, you know, you have like 500 pound women, you have like midgets, you have, or small people, I'm sorry, you have
you son of a bitch,
yes,
little people,
I'm sorry, you have all these different shapes and sizes and colors, and in this new one, everybody was a cover model for like Vogue magazine. No, everybody looked the exact same, but maybe with wigs on. You know, it wasn't. It was definitely not an outcast type situation.
Let's just jump right in here, because this is something that's a little bit that's been bugging me since I saw it. Where the main character, the main antagonist of the entire show is Frankenfurter.
Frankenfurter, yeah, Laverne Cox.
Well, in the original, it was Tim Curry.
Correct.
Right? And he was a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania.
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
Well, and then now in the update, in the remake, they had Laverne Cox, who is the transgender actress from Orange is the New Black, right?
Right.
And here's where I'm really confused. Transgender person is not a transvestite.
Okay.
It's one of those situations where I think that they're kind of just lumping the whole thing together into some weird category, and it was like, because like, I just don't get where they were kind of making the whole angle. It kind of lost its meaning being that it was transgender person now. I think it kind of, you know, because she was up there, and nothing on Laverne Cox. I thought she did great, whatever. I mean, it was flat. It definitely was no Tim Curry, you know?
No.
But that being said, I wouldn't say that, like, oh, she did a bad job. It was fine. There were some unique takes on the character that I thought was a fun way to go about it. But
do you have an example of that?
Of the things that I liked?
Yeah, of her, yeah.
Well, there was this one scene where she's getting confronted right after her. She started kind of doing this weird kind of mouth movement that I couldn't really figure out. It almost looked alien in a way, where it was like the mouth was moving independent of the rest of the face and the body. And I was just like, it was almost like kind of anchoring the end sequence credits and the beginning sequence credits, where they have kind of just those mouth outlines singing the song.
Yeah.
And it was like that, she was kind of doing that mouth thing right there. And I thought that was, I don't know if that was not, but it was something that I thought was a really, I rewound it and watched it a few times just because it was like so odd looking. And I was just like, yeah, that's really cool. But overall, it was just, you know.
No, I thought it was flat too. I thought a lot of the delivery was pretty bad. I mean, I like Laverne Cox. I was really excited to hear that she was cast in this role, because this is a pretty big role to fill, considering Tim Curry just, like, you know, just made that role amazing.
It's iconic. I mean, yeah. It's an iconic role.
But I didn't feel like there was something really, really sexy about Tim Curry, in that you kind of, you really felt at home with it. Like, you almost wanted to give yourself up to him, even though he was like crazy. But with Laverne's version, I did not at all. Like, I just wanted to stay away. I don't know why. I didn't feel that warmth that Tim Curry portrayed a little bit in the original role. So
see, I feel the kind of opposite of that, really. Almost. I almost feel like the Tim Curry version of the character was dangerous, and I didn't know what was going to... You were afraid to fall into that spider's web because you didn't know what was going to happen next. Well, with Laverne Cox, I felt like, you know, it's fun and sweet, and, you know, I guess there's an element of seduction, but it was like the Tim Curry Frankenfurter was like seduction against your will, you know, as opposed to the Laverne Cox version was really, you know, you just opened yourself up to being seduced, I guess.
I don't know. It was, I felt safer, I guess, with Tim Curry than I did with Laverne Cox.
That's an interesting take. I didn't have the same reaction, but I, you know, I get what you're saying. I will say this, that to me, the shining moment of the whole recreation was Victoria Justice as Janet. I thought she was great. In almost every aspect of the role, the singing, the song, she couldn't save the songs, because just flat and karaoke-y type, American Idol type versions of the songs, where it took all the balls and the sex out of it just to make it kind of acceptable for the Glee crowd, if you will. Or
yeah, they lingered on every note. Yeah, they lingered on every note and had to go high and low with, like, everything. I was like, oh, come on, just sing it. I thought Victoria Justice was decent, but she's probably my favorite out of the rest, out of all of the cast, basically. I mean, I did not like Ryan McMartin as Brad at all, or Anna Lee Ashford as Columbia. I thought that Columbia was terrible.
And that really bummed me out, because Columbia is my favorite character of the whole thing.
Yeah, did you not like this one?
It was okay, you know. It was one of those where, again, you know, Columbia, the, you know, the the super fan, you know, she's just an oddball weirdo. And it was one of those where in the end, it was just a saccharine version of it. It was like, you know, it was mass market appeals sort of thing. I don't think it's her. I think that with the music and this and the direction and all that stuff, I think that I don't blame the actors as much as I do the music and the songs and the taking the guts out of it, I guess.
Right. No, I mean, it could have been so much better. And then you have Reeve Carney as Riff Raff, which was awful. I couldn't get into that.
Adam Lambert as Eddie.
Yeah, I couldn't get into that. I mean, you go from Meatloaf to Adam Lambert. I don't get it. And then Christina Milian as Magenta. She's okay, but everything felt flat here. And I just think it was watered down for Fox primetime television. It went like Glee, American Idol route rather than like being a, you know, pushing the bounds of like, you know, the sex and the satire and being the oddball. I think out of the original, I think that's why.
Christina Milian is like sexy too, which isn't really the Magenta character.
Yeah,
I mean she can have a certain allure, I guess, but it was getting all the pretty people together, you know, to make something for everybody, you know, and there was decisions made throughout the thing where it just really. I was like, why did they do it that way? That doesn't even make... It took away from the story. It's like, it would have been better if you just skipped that whole gather.
Yeah. No, I agree. And then, of course, you have Tim Curry coming back to this remake as the narrator. And it totally seemed like he did not want to be there whatsoever. I feel like it was just phoned in. I mean, it's sad that he had a stroke and I wish he didn't, but like, oh man, I just felt bad for him the entire time he was on television. Cause he couldn't really do anything, but really sit in a chair.
Yeah. I don't know why I gave him a hard time. He had a physical ailment that caught, you know, I think you're harsh on that. That was, you know, I mean, cause I agree with you, you know, I think that I don't know if it was added to have him in that role. I think that if he completely divorced himself of it, he probably would have done himself and the fans. I get the logic of trying to you know, hand over the mantle to the new crew and have some legitimacy on it. I mean, I get why they would do it strategically. I just think that it fell flat.
Oh, it was terrible. I felt bad for him. I just, like, why would maybe... I don't know why he did it. Because if he wanted to give the torch down, this is not the one to do it. This was not the project to do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that in the end, I was actually telling my wife this as we were watching it. I was like, you know, I wish they went a completely different direction with it and made the... Because, again, trying to just, you know, make the gritty rock and roll version kind of vanilla for a mass appeal, I was like, you might as well have just made it some EDM version where you have Skrillex come out and do a remix of something. And I almost wish they took it in a different direction. If you're not going to beat the original, then do something completely different.
Yeah. Because I mean, all this remake made me do is go watch the original and forget that I ever watched this remake.
I think that's the lesson to the audience out there at this point. I'm sure that you couldn't garner from the tone of our discussion up to this point, but really, don't worry about the remake. And again, I'm giving Victoria Justice a passing, but everything else, I mean, in every way, the original is superior. So it's not worth it. If you haven't watched it, don't bother seeking it out. Just go watch the original and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, and like there's the 40th anniversary on Blu-ray for cheap on Amazon. It has tons of extras on it with interviews and commentaries, audience participation track. It's really cool. That's the one you should see. And then after you see the original one several times and you really get a feel for it, then if it's free, you're curious about this watered down network TV version, sure, give it a shot. But yeah, just try to avoid it until you watch the original, you know, a baker's dozen times.
This is where you and I part ways. I'm telling you out there, my friendly audience, do not go watch this remake.
Do not.
If it it was free, skip it. I watched it for free on the television, and I feel like they just stole my time from me.
Oh, that's, yeah, I was upset too.
I'm not going to get carried away. It's a dumb show, but it is one of those where it's like, you know, save your time and energy. Go watch the original. Invite some friends over and have a good time. If you get a chance to go watch one of those midnight screenings and do the audience participation thing, go do that. It's a lot of fun.
I agree. All right, moving on. Let's talk about some good old Birdemic. For those of you who are not familiar with Birdemic 1 or 2, Birdemic 1, called Shock and Terror, came out in 2010 and was directed by a guy named James Wynn. And he billed himself and the movie as an independent romantic horror film. And he, James Wynn, supposedly is the greatest romantic horror film director ever made. Mr. James Wynn made the first Birdemic movie over the course of several years, and he made it for less than $10,000. He drew his inspirations from Hitchcock's The Birds and Apocalypse Now because he wanted to make an anti-war movie. And throughout Birdemic, there's all these, I wouldn't even say subliminal messages, but like very like on-the-nose messages of like how anti-war James Wynn is. It's really fun. It's less than $10,000 movie, and if you see the trailers, a lot of critics say this is the worst movie ever made, and I gotta go to Wade Davis on this because I know he has a soft spot and love for bad movies. So Birdemic is one of those on the top of the list, and I gotta get Wade's input on all of Birdemic Part 1.
I love Birdemic. Can I just...
I love Birdemic so much.
I do. I actually, you know, would send out tweets to Alan Baugh, who was the star of the thing, just be like, hey, we're going to watch this with a group of people. And he would tweet back as we're watching it. We would end up trying to live tweet him in as we're doing it. Okay, so Birdemic is one of those movies where, I think it's fair what you said, Brian, that you describe it as like that I like bad movies, but I want to qualify that bad movies out there that I don't like, you like Transformers and shit like that.
Well, I don't think I don't think those are the movies we're talking, I think we're talking about like these types of movies, yeah.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. I want to kind of define it a little bit. I think that this, especially Birdemic, falls into the thing where the aspirations of the movie makers far exceeds their abilities here. It's just like they want to, I mean, like James Wynn, you said it right, where he's like, he made this, he really did want to make this as an homage to The Birds. I read somewhere that he actually made this movie after watching The Birds and An Inconvenient Truth.
Yeah, so, he wanted to, after he watched The Inconvenient Truth, he drew a lot of inspiration for that and put it into Birdemic. And if you see Birdemic, you're gonna notice it.
Oh, yes, there's a strong environmental theme. There's a strong, as you mentioned, the Imagine Peace, the Yoko Ono's website,
yes,
is, you know, on T-shirts and posters throughout. It's extremely heavy-handed. I think he attempted for subtlety, but he's not a master of subtlety at all. I mean, but, you know, there's examples of it. Like, when you first start watching the movie, you know, and I love to watch it with people where it's their first time seeing it. Because the opening scene is just somebody set a camcorder on the dash of a car and would drive it down a windy road, and then they would kind of run the title credits over it. And it goes on way longer than it should. Not only that, at one point it's clear that the camera kind of tips over, kind of not quite on its side, but kind of at a 45-degree angle, and they just kept it in. You know, it's like, we don't have the time or budget to reshoot that, obviously. We got to just keep it in and move on. So first of all, people get kind of bored at the very title sequence of the movie, where they're like, what is this? Why am I watching it? And nodding with a dumb smile on my face at them watching it. Like, you have no idea what's in store. And, you know, as you're watching it, you know, it becomes clear, like, they obviously don't have the budget or equipment or knowledge on how to do sound mixing. And that's why you'll have a phone conversation with somebody, and the camera is always on whoever's talking because they don't know how to overdub sound in. And so you'll have, like, somebody say yes back and forth with each other over the phone, but the camera has to keep cutting to the two different people in the back. And it's fantastic, where it's just everything, it looks like something that a high school project would have been. And you said they spent $10,000 on this one. I'm still going to ask the same question I did with Rocky Horror. Where did the money go? I feel like I could have got my nieces and nephews together, and we could have made this thing for $100.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. He's crazy.
It's one of those where, first of all, it's Birdemic Shock and Terror. And again, where I think it's kind of an homage to the Birds, and the Birds is slow, right? I mean, it came out, what, in the 60s, right? So all those Hitchcock movies, when you rewatch them, it's like today's pacing is way different than
it was a slow burn back then.
Yeah, it was a slow burn, but it gets you to where you want to be.
Right.
Well, I think I can't tell if he wanted to make this movie a slow burn or not, but nothing happens for like a good 40, 45 minutes of you don't see a bird at all. And in the end, I feel like one of his family members owns a restaurant, because at one point they went to this restaurant and it was like a commercial where they shot the whole thing where it pans in out front and then you go inside. And if it wasn't his family's restaurant, I feel like he should be getting free meals there for life from now on.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just really, it was shot like a commercial. I mean, it was clear, like, there's a band in there playing at one point. I feel like it's got to be his buddy or just somebody he knows said, hey, you want to be in a movie?
Well, going back and reading some of the behind-the-scenes and production notes on it, supposedly James basically did not get any shooting permits to film anywhere on location. No. He was sometimes run out or asked to leave or just showed up with the camera and started shooting. So who knows what happened? And supposedly Wynn was a weird guy. Like, he would get mad at his actors and, like, not talk to them for, like, several weeks on end and, like, have to use another actor to talk to the other actor he was mad at as an intermediary.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow, what is this guy doing? But he made...
He's an artist.
Yeah, he's a true artist. But, yeah, like movies like Apocalypse Now or Inconvenient Truth, or it's a very environmental friendly movie. Like, he wants to, and he for anti-war movie, it's all over the place. All that messaging is everywhere. And, like, that's, you know, at the end of the movie, it's like the birds have decided to stop attacking because they want to give us humans a chance to fix the environment and to have peace, which is so... It's so crazy. But that's what he wants. But you have to talk about the actual birds attacking. You have to talk about the special effects, the visual effects, if you can call them that, in this movie, Wade.
Well, they're very special.
They are special.
So clearly they had some sort of bird CGI animation thing, but they only had about 3 seconds of it, I'm guessing. So they just kept replaying the same little bit over and over. These are radioactive or birds that have kind of become
mutant tile. Yeah, they spit acid and all sorts of other things.
And they're explosive. And, yes. And they're basically kamikaze at one point, where they just dive bomb and cause a massive explosion as they dive bomb into people.
Yeah, and again, these are like CG birds, but they're, like Wade said, it looks like they had enough money for the worst CG studio in town to do like a 3-second loop of birds doing the same thing over and over. And even with the sound effects, there's only like 2 or 3 sound effects that are looped over and over. Right.
Yes, it's beautiful. It's
it's beautiful. That's beautiful, man.
Because it's one of those where once the birds start, I mean, they have like a weird plane noise where the birds are like dive bombing people and kamikazing and the things causing explosions and spitting radioactively. But it, again, this is like, it takes about 45, 50 minutes in to get into the movie to get to this.
Right.
And then once you're there, you're like, I've had some people turn to me and be like, this is what we were waiting for? This is the birdemic. It's happening.
It's shock and terror. It's the movie that does not have shock nor terror in it.
And it doesn't have birds a lot of the time either.
That's true. And in the middle of the film, there is like a music video of a karaoke song, right?
Oh, yes.
What's the lyrics to that? What's like the main refrain of that?
Hanging out with my... Or let's all have a party or something.
Hanging out with your family. Gonna have a party. And
yeah.
It's like, it does not make sense, but there is like 5 minutes or more devoted to this scene. And I think James could have gotten away with a 10 to 12 minute short film. But to make it a feature length, he really just had to, like Wade said, prop a camera up on the dashboard and just film people driving, getting out of their cars, closing the car doors, walking into where they're going to. It's kind of crazy.
I feel like this movie is about a 30-minute movie. But what they've done is take every establishing shot and hold it way too long in the establishment, and then also hold it at the end for way longer than they should, in order to kind of stretch out time to get it up to feature length. Where I think, does this movie clock in at what, 90 minutes?
Is it 90? I'd have to look it up.
It's over 80, right? And so you know, it's riding with the dashboard camera going on. It's you know, walking in. It's like, there's no logic in a lot of the movie. Alan Ball plays Rod, right?
Right, okay.
And Rod...
It is 105 minutes.
Whoa!
An hour
well,
and...
Well, it goes by like a swift train there. So you mean he could have cut like 15, 20 minutes out and still through late?
The scenes with the actual birds attack that are just the 3-second loops of birds really just flying in the air with sounds, that probably makes up, what, 3 minutes of the whole movie? 4 minutes?
Yeah, I'd say that's about right. They gotta go visit a professor at some point. They gotta...
But
there's the unsexiest sexy scene you've ever seen.
Yeah, the unsexiest sex scene.
He didn't want to insinuate anyone was having sex, so he would leave women had to keep bikini tops on the whole time or something like that. It was just
it was really weird. And like, he wants to make a romantic movie, so the movie is about a man and a woman falling in love and doing the environmental thing, trying to save the planet, and then, you know, saving themselves and others from attack of these birds.
And let's not think for a second that it's like, oh, he tried to bite off more than he could chew here. I think that if he just tried for one angle, he probably couldn't succeed.
That's very true. That's very true. I don't know.
It's
like
one of those where I think he's doing himself a favor trying to say it's 15 things, because in the end you can say, well, you know, I tried to do a lot there. So there was a lot of different things. Yes. I had a lot of balls in the air there.
Yeah, I mean, this is James Wynn's baby. Like, he wrote, produced, directed everything. And like, his writing comes out in like one of the first scenes where the main guy, what's his name, Ball, right?
Yeah, Alan. Well, it's Rod, but yeah, Alan Ball.
Yeah, but the character is Rod, and he's supposedly a salesman of some sort of company. And what?
No, go. Yeah, I know where you're gonna go with it.
Yeah, so he's trying to make a sale over the phone. You hear him like trying to give, you know, in my air quotations, hard sell. And the sale is $2 million, and so Rod, this character, is like, well, I'll give you 50% off. Well, you don't hear.
If you tell me we have a deal right now, I'll give you a 50% discount. And then basically, you it must be they didn't do the audio and the person he was talking to, but positive reaction in the end, and he's high-fiving everybody. He's like, we just got the sale for $1 million, everybody. But it means that he just gave away $1 million in less than 5 seconds.
Yeah, because you didn't hear the $2 million offer. You just heard like, yeah, we just got $1 million sale, but yeah, 50% off is $1 million, so he should be fired for that.
Well, you know, I read somewhere that James Wynn actually modeled the character of Rod after himself. And that makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's like, we're going to get $1 million, but you're getting $2 million worth of product. Good for you.
Well, he made it happen where he made a sale and got $1 million, but ended up losing everything. It was for like solar panels or something. They sold like green energy or solar panels or something.
So this movie he brought to film festivals, and for some reason he kind of got in, and he rented out the theaters himself, and he made these postcards and flyers for people to come see this movie. And he even in his flyers, everything was spelled wrong. Like instead of Birdemic, it was called Biddemic. And there's
well let's back it up one sec. First of all, it was Bidremic.
Yes.
You just transpose the R and the D. But let's take it back one step further. First, he couldn't get it bought by anybody. He tried to get distributors to pick it up and send it out. He couldn't get anybody to do that. So he does what everybody in Hollywood does when they can't get a distributor. He rents a van and then paints a bunch of birds and hangs a bunch of props on it and then drives it around town like a mobile billboard saying, hey, come. And then he hands out flyers saying, come watch Bidremic.
Yeah, Bidremic.
and you got to admire the hustle, right?
Yeah, seriously.
Don't hate the player.
Yeah, so so it worked. He got a couple of good outlets to cover the story and review it, which people actually was like, this is like such a terrible movie, but it's so bad it's good. You have to see it to believe it on how bad it is. And it became like an instant cult following, and people started showing up and, you know, watching it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
they were passing tapes around, making it happen, and then it's like, there you go.
Yep. And then, so that was 2010. 3 years later, James wanted to make a sequel called Birdemic 2, The Resurrection, and went the way that the world is going now with crowdfunding, where he did a Kickstarter, I think. And
Indiegogo, if I remember.
Oh,
right.
Indiegogo. So, Wade, you could probably elaborate more on this than I could.
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, there's one other thing that's worthy of note here. Birdemic was not his first movie. He did a movie called Jack and Julia first, which is like all romance.
Wow.
But yeah, no, it's Birdemic shows his evolution as an auteur because it's actually better.
I don't know why I would call James Wynn an auteur, but we just did.
Why would you not, sir?
I guess so.
But so in 2012, actually started kind of putting it out there because with the cult following of Birdemic and all that, he said, hey, I'm making a sequel. And there was an Indiegogo campaign for some crowdsourcing to go ahead and Birdemic 2, The Resurrection, and trying to get folks on board. Well, you know, being a patron of the arts that I am, I thought it was only appropriate that I would support James and his vision and get on board with that right now.
So did you donate?
I absolutely donated to it. In fact, you know, one of the perks I got from my donation was, my contribution to the arts, if you will, I'm actually listed in the special thanks credits of Birdemic 2. I have like an autographed copy here in the house.
So you went all out to support Birdemic 2, The Resurrection.
It didn't cost as much as you think it would. I got an autographed poster from him and an autographed DVD and my name in the credits. And I think it cost me like a cool 50.
Wow. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm glad they followed through on all of their prizes and stuff that you got. And
And actually, not only did they follow through on all the rewards, they made the movie. Did you see Birdemic 2?
I did not, but I know that it takes place in Hollywood, and the birds now are attacking because of global warming, and it's in 3D, or they wanted to make it in 3D, and there's like a zombie-esque element to it as well. Is that right?
You got to capitalize on that Walking Dead type stuff. You got to get in on that zombie action. It's important. So basically, I'll say this. All the complaints of Birdemic, where it's too slow and all that other stuff, they're fully addressed in Birdemic 2. It's a much better paced movie. It's still got the nonsense involved. The one thing that, you know, you can consider this a pro or a con. It depends on your point of view. Where people are kind of in on the joke, you know, it's like Sharknado 4. You know, everybody knows that this is a dumb movie in the end. And it's like the same thing with Birdemic 2. Everybody kind of knows it's silly, campy, whatever. But there's still elements of things that are making. If you like Birdemic 2 is absolutely worth seeking out.
Yeah, and it's a cool.
It's one of those where it leaves you. All the great stuff of Birdemic is still there, and at the same time, it has a much better pacing.
And it's also a cool 90 minutes rather than an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, they tightened it up.
They did.
They made it nice and tight there. Yeah.
No. I've read that it had the zombie element, in that there was 3D, and that there was a lot of dancing in it.
Oh, I don't know if I would say a lot of dancing in it. He is trying to expand art, right? I mean, and isn't that really what every artist is trying to do?
Expanding art.
Yeah, and so there, the 3D element, I don't recall a 3D element per se. I could be mistaken here. I mean, I just have it on Blu-ray too, so I don't know what that means. But if they had like a theatrical, I'm sure they had a theatrical recent release in 3D. And you know, now that you've mentioned it to me, it's breaking my heart that I never got to experience that, you know?
Now, are the birds, the special effects of the birds in part two, the same as part one?
But not near as much as you think they would be. It's clearly made by the same guy. I mean, if they did not go out and get somebody better to do these sorts of things, I mean, it's a James Wan movie still. So if you love James Wan, and I don't see, if you're listening to this now, I can't see how you're not.
Yeah.
Then you gotta check it out for sure. I mean, in the end, it's one of those where it's definitely worth the watch. If you like Birdemic, Birdemic 2 is a lot of fun. Birdemic still has the place in my heart, okay?
Yeah.
But Birdemic 2 is fun, and, you know, I'm in the credits.
Well, you got to do it for that. And we hear that James Wan is working on a Birdemic 3, which will be the final one in this trilogy, supposedly, and it's subtitled Sea Eagle.
Sea Eagle, that is correct.
Sea Eagle.
S-E-A.
And I picture like Zach Braff and Turkleton from Scrubs going, Eagle! Oh my God.
Well, here's the deal. You know how I was just regaling you with the story about how I got in on Birdemic 2 and made myself a part of history?
Yes.
And all those folks that were just hearing that, like Brian, I'm sure yourself included, where you're getting jealous of me and my story.
Yeah.
Indiegogo currently has a campaign running for Birdemic 3 Sea Eagle. You guys can jump in on it now. They have a half a million dollar goal. Right now, they're up to 96 bucks. So
what's it out of? Is there like a – and how long do they have?
They got about 2 weeks to raise the rest of that half a million. I mean, they only got 499,000, you know, let's just say, you know, 900 bucks to go. I mean, you know, so they got a little ways to go.
So are you going to donate for this?
I am.
Or have you already?
I have not yet. There's only five backers yet. for that, getting you up to that $96. I mean, there's still one left of an associate producer for $5,000. So if you got $5,000 burning a hole in your pocket and you want to see art happen, I think that you got to take advantage of it.
Well, I am definitely going to post the Indiegogo campaign on our Facebook, Twitter, and Boomstick, so that if you want to donate to a modern art masterpiece, such as Birdemic 3 Sea Eagle, you'll be able to.
Yeah, I mean, how often can you say I'm a part of movie magic?
Right, right. It's easier nowadays than it was a long time ago. So yeah, seriously, go. Check Netflix, iTunes, go to your go to Amazon. I think you're going to really love Birdemic for how awful it is, and you'll want to have it in your collection because it's one of those movies that you'll want to watch after 10 p.m. or midnight with beers, with friends, and laugh at it. You just have a really good time.
Well, that's the best part of these movies. You hit the nail on the head right there, where basically you come, you've had a night of having a few drinks with some friends and hanging out. Everybody come back to your place, grab a bite to eat. Watch a movie. And the thing is, with these sorts of movies, you put it on and you don't have to pay attention. You can have a conversation with somebody and then you come back to it. Not too much has evolved since that point in time. And you can just really, you know, sit back and have some fun and have some laughs with friends. And that's really my favorite part of all of these type of movies.
Yeah, no, that's it is so good. So yeah, Birdemic, that's the word. The Birdemic is the word. Emic. that was a horrible but excellent joke, like the movies. Let's move on to our last topic.
Much like the movies, I think you gave yourself too much credit for excellence.
It's more mediocre.
You're the best in the business, though. I've told you that time and time again, so I'm never going to say that you're not the best.
Well, thank you, sir.
The Ayatollah of rock and roller,
Chris Jericho. Let's talk about some of our favorite TV shows, but of the Halloween episodes that we've seen over the many years. I'm sure you have a couple, Wade. What are some ones that we can tell our listeners that they might want to watch this weekend or tomorrow or something like that for the Halloween or next year even?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Halloween episodes are a ton of fun, and especially what we do here is we'll have and multiple Halloween episodes you can now find on Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and all those too. So if you could just pop those on, and actually we have those running in the background while we're, you know, hanging out at home handing out candy. So it's actually kind of a fun opportunity to get in the mood, watch some things, and have some laughs. I tend to gravitate towards some of the comedies and those sorts of things. The ones that really stand out for me are like The Office. The American version of The Office did three different Halloween episodes, and they were all really good, where they just had crazy costumes, and you would see Jim in his, you know, three-hole punch costume, or it's just really a lazy man, and you know, he was some inspiration for some of my lazy man costumes that we talked about at the
yes, top of the yes.
Yeah, and so I think that The Office, have you seen any of these Office episodes?
Oh yeah, I know, I've seen every episode of The Office.
Well, I didn't want to turn this into a bragging show. I mean, it was just like, hey, you want to talk about the Halloween episodes? You know, I've seen every episode, too.
No. And they're so, so good. The Dunder Mifflin. Didn't Michael Scott, like, wasn't he like a MacGyver or a bomb one point?
Well, he did have his whole, he was, you know, there was a subplot that would carry throughout multiple seasons of his Special Agent Michael Scarn sort of, yes, screenplay that he was writing in the background.
Yes, and was it the Halloween episode where he had his conjoined twin attached to himself?
That was my favorite Michael Scott costume, where he had like a paper mache head of himself right next to himself.
That was pretty
ridiculous.
Good. Yeah, that was excellent. And then one of them, what was it, Dwight or Creed that went as Heath Ledger Joker?
I believe it was Dwight, but now you said Creed, maybe it was. It seems like a Dwight thing, though.
Right, right. Yeah, no, it was those were excellent, and the Office, the American version of The Office, is just it's so fantastic, and still it holds up very well.
Yeah, it's one of those where it really, you know, for those, you know, even if you don't, if you do or you don't work in an office environment, you kind of recognize some of those people a little bit. You know, you have the guy that goes in too hard, you have the person that doesn't try very hard at all but seems to get by okay. And
yeah.
So I love the archetypes there, but the Halloween episodes are more fun than I've ever had at a Halloween, any job I've ever done.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to bring out, since we're talking TV shows and horror, we're gonna have to talk about The Simpsons, one of the best shows ever made, the Treehouse of Horror. They just had their 27th Treehouse of Horror this past season, and I enjoyed it. But some of my favorite episodes from those are, there was one called Terror at 5.5 feet from season 5, and it was like the Twilight Zone with the monster on the wing of the plane. There's someone on the wing, something, Jim. That was my excellent impression of you know who. but
I'm sure he's a fan.
Yes, but that Simpsons episode, or that segment in Treehouse of Horror, was there was a goblin that got a hold of Otto's school bus for Springfield Elementary, and Bart was the only one that saw the goblin. It was just so funny and so great. Another one, of course, was the Treehouse of Horror number 3 from season 2, which was the Clown Without Pity episode, where the Krusty doll came alive with a knife and tried to kill Homer.
Yeah.
That was excellent. And of course, we all remember the Edgar Allan Poe one, the Nevermore, with the Bart crow, which was excellent. And of course, one of my favorite, I think my absolute favorite, was the Simpsons version of The Shining from season 6, which was
Treehouse of Horror number 5.
Yes, yes. And that was when they did The Shining, and that was when Marge found the letter, or the book Homer was writing, that said all beer or no TV and no beer make Homer go something something, and Marge goes
make Homer something something.
Yes,
and then the line was
go crazy, and he goes don't mind if I do, and he starts freaking her out by like starts freaking Marge out by like doing weird sounds, and then he sees himself in the mirror and he freaks out and scares himself and falls down the stairs. It's so good. So good.
I mean, it was really that. I think that one was probably where they took it to the next level here. I mean, they always had a pride on the Simpsons of making those Treehouse of Horror episodes, ones that kind of stand on their own outside of the series. Nothing's inside canon, so you can kind of do whatever you want. I mean, in that episode, if the Shining one, Homer is chasing after his family with an axe at one point.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
So it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is dang good. A couple other ones, of course, we have to bring out the Great Pumpkin, the Charlie Brown TV special. That's always a good one to watch.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the Great Pumpkin. Charlie Brown is kind of one of those memories that it's like it's something fun that's to pass on to new generations. Charlie Brown in general, I think, is something great to kind of pass on to younger kids, if not just to get hopefully garner an appreciation of jazz, but the Great Pumpkin's it's a fun story, and there's not a lot of Halloween stories to pass down in Halloween tradition, so that's a fun one to kind of share with younger generations.
Yeah, yeah. It's always like a certain nostalgic feeling for me to watch, you know, the Thanksgiving, the Christmas, and the Halloween one of that.
Yeah.
And I know...
Wait, can I bring up one?
Yeah, definitely.
Let me bring up one.
Yeah, go for it.
What about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yes.
You remember the Halloween episode there? The Halloween episode, it's kind of misleading at times because you think about it for a different reason, but their Halloween episode was Who Got Dee Pregnant? And if you remember, it was during a Halloween costume party where they're kind of going through and remaking the scene over and over. It's kind of a Rashomon style redoing the scene where new information filters in. Do you remember this episode?
I do. Yes, I do. Vaguely. It's been so long.
It's so good. It's absolutely... I mean, Always Sunny, they're entering their 11th season now, I believe. And these guys, every year, I'm saying it might be the best year yet. It's like, it's amazing how they're like 10, 11 years in and they're still improved. But the Who Got D episode, or Who Got D Pregnant episode, is so funny. And because, and basically, you know, they keep, they're all drunk and they keep kind of telling each other the story. And then the more they kind of get new people to tell their version of it, the more it kind of flushes out to the truth.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely one to seek out. I mean, it was season 6, I believe. So, okay. You know, about halfway through that season, I think episode 7. So check that one out and watch that again. It's definitely worth the watch. Just to, it's something that people generally don't think about first when you think about Halloween episodes, but it deserves to be in every conversation.
Right, right. I believe Parks and Rec did a Halloween episode where they had a Halloween party at Andy's house, or Andy and what's her name's
April's
house, and Andy was the UFC fighter Chuck Liddell. And Ron Swanson came as his pirate and just ended up fixing like things at the house that needed to be fixed. Which was
every year Ron dressed as a pirate, because that, there was a few different episodes, and I remember one of the Halloween episodes for Parks and Recreation that was actually the birth of Andy's character Burt Macklin.
Yes, yes,
who is like the FBI sort of guy,
right?
That he had the character within the character, and it was the Halloween episode that Greg Pickus won. Was the one that kind of started that whole thing out.
Yes, absolutely. We're forgetting a great one, Freaks and Geeks. Episode 3 of Freaks and Geeks, Trick or Treats, where Bill Haverchuck dressed as the Bionic Woman, and Sam Weir went as the not the Tin Man, but Gort from The Day the Earth Stood Still. And Neil,
this is another time where you're going to yell at me. We get these occasionally. I've never seen an episode of Freaks and Geeks, so
okay.
So everybody tells me how great it is and how I need to watch it, and I like everybody that's, you know, of all from the Apatow crew that's making it happen today. I'm a big fan of all of them, and I know it's something that I need to go check out.
Yeah, it's so good. It's like the perfect show, and there's a whole episode about Halloween, and you will relive your Halloween experience if you grew up in the 80s. It's that good. And of course, we mentioned this before the podcast, Bob's Burgers, right?
Oh, man. Bob's Burgers is so good. It's such a great show. I mean, their Halloween episode where the Belcher kids were going to the rich neighborhood in order to get the good candy.
Yeah, the full-size candy bars.
And then you got all the teenager kids trying to raise hell, and they're trying to run away from that. I mean, it's a really good episode.
Yeah, I think that is season 3, episode 2. So if you wanted to watch that, yeah, that is a very, very good one. Yes, you're right. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Damn it, I see it right now. So good. So good, I remember that. I think that's a good start for people to watch some of their favorite TV shows. If you have another one, let me know. Do you have another one?
Well, I mean, you know what? I think we've got a really good start for folks there. If you guys have any questions, just go ahead and shoot Brian a call. You want me to give out your cell phone number? And then that way they can just text you if they got any questions or something?
Yeah, your number's still 911. Oh, righty then.
No, you know what? If there's anything else that, you know, I think that this is a great opportunity for the comments section.
Yeah.
You know, there's some stuff that we missed that we should be talking about.
Yeah, let us know in the comments on our Facebook at Multimedia Men, on Facebook or Twitter, and we'll get to those. But I think, I mean, we've been talking for a good hour. I think that's a good second show. What do you think, buddy?
Oh, man, I didn't think the first one could be surpassed. And then here we've done it. Gone and done it.
We done it. And we're going to do this every weekend. So prepare your ear holes, prepare your ear pussies, because we're going to rock and roll with you.
God bless America. What? You know, we had a really sweet show where we were talking about fun nostalgia moments and all that, and then you just said, prepare your ear pussies?
We're going to come in your ear pussies.
Oh, for Christ's sakes.
We can edit it out.
We're going to have to edit this out. If you're hearing this, then I'm just going to apologize in advance. Because this should be cut.
This should be cut. But yeah, we are the Multimedia Men Podcast. Thanks for listening. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter at Multimedia Men. We are on iTunes and Stitcher Radio under Multimedia Men. Please subscribe to us and rate and review us. Five stars. And I'm with the amazing Wade Davis. You can find him on Facebook and Twitter at Wade Davis or Wade G. Davis. And
Just go to Boomstick Comics. That's where you need to go to get all your information.
Yeah, boomstickcomics.com is where all of this will be as well. So, and you can find out reviews and news and movies and music and wrestling. So it's going to be good. It's going to be awesome. And we'll see you next time.